Welcome to the Too Posh Podcast.
I am Gabrielle. I am a former New York Mafia princess, originally from Austria. I am the mother of three and the owner of Too Posh Boutique. And here with my beautiful co-host, Marcella, my daughter.
Hello, I'm Marcella. I'm a dancer, choreographer, model, and designer for Too Posh. And I say whatever the f*** I want.
My name is Bernie Diamond, and I am the most interesting one-armed Hispanic French bulldog lover in this room.
I am Polly. I am a certified sexual health consultant and educator, former professional dominatrix, currently working at the largest adult novelty store in the Texas Panhandle.
What will they say next? Welcome to the Too Posh Podcast.
Welcome to our Too Posh Podcast. I am Gabrielle here with my amazing co-hosts that make me so happy. My daughter, Marcella.
Hello.
And Bernie.
Hello, hello,
and our spider. I forget. I haven't done it in so long.
You're always here.
He makes the show what it is because I couldn't do it without him.
That's for sure.
And this is episode 203, which makes it part four.
Wow.
Of my mafia story, and I have no idea how many parts there will be.
That's
because
never
there's
ending.
A lot.
We could make 200 episodes just on your mafia story.
Never ending because Larry's daughters are going to come on the show. Larry Iorizzo's daughters.
Are you serious?
Yes.
She was my babysitter.
Where do they live?
Well, they one lives in Austin and the other one lives in Florida. I'm probably not going to get them on here in person, so we will have to do Zoom with them, but that's so okay. Awesome.
It's good enough.
Yeah, that's good enough.
I think I would call that very much good enough. So, that's pretty awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah, it will be.
Do we know when?
They're very close with my mom.
I will. Oh, we'll set it up. I just wanted to get here, and then we're going to go have them come on because they have stories.
Like I said, we could create 200 episodes just for your life.
So before we start, I wanted to once again thank everyone for listening so much. Like, if you take the time to listen to our show, we're really appreciative.
And if it's your first time, please subscribe
and tell your friends.
To our YouTube. Yes,
yeah. And please. Click on that little bell on YouTube because that will let you know when new episodes come out, which we have new ones every week. So that's exciting.
I'm excited we get to create new ones now because I feel like we've had such a big lax.
I've missed it so much.
I've missed you guys dramatically.
So
sad.
I know. The episode 203, which is a continuation of 200. Episode.
You guys have to go back if you haven't seen this because it's so good. So good.
Part four. The next two episodes will be about what my ex-husband Peter Ranieri was up to with his mob boss friends, Michael Francisi, Sonny Francisi, and Larry Iorizzo before I met him. And I actually met him, I found out later when I pieced everything together, literally weeks before everything fell apart. So I wanted to start with the murder at the restaurant because Peter had a restaurant in Smithtown, New York, and I wanted to go more into details that he owned. Like, you would, I mean, if you think about your normal Italian family restaurant, that's what he and his first wife Margie had, and they built it. And why he did is Peter was dyslexic. So he always struggled in school. Mm-hmm. And back then, they didn't diagnose people. Wow. So he always felt really stupid.
Did he graduate high school?
No. The most amazing part is actually that all those years ago that he taught himself to read and write. Wow. He was actually really good at it, but it was hard back then. Mm-hmm. No one even knew what it was.
Yeah.
And so
that's crazy.
And what he did was he hung out with his dad, and his dad was actually part of creating moonshine.
Really?
In
my grandpa.
In Manhattan.
What in the world?
In Patsy's restaurant. So,
which Patsy's is still around.
Patsy's is still around. No? And so he was part of the restaurant business. He would take Peter like in the night, like his son making moonshine. Like it was insane. And
wow.
Whoever doesn't know what moonshine is, it is.
Oh, man. Real moonshine.
Fuck you up.
It'll burn everything going down. I'm sure it burns going out. It's just.
But it was illegal, correct?
Yeah.
And it's called moonshine because they did it at night to not get caught.
See, I didn't know
I didn't know that's why it was called moonshine.
Oh, it's
it
like
comes from
rough.
The fact that illegal spirits were made under the light of the moon to avoid detection from authorities.
Never knew
this. Oh, I didn't either.
Didn't know that at all.
I was today years old when I learned that.
Today years old. I've never heard that before.
I was so today funny. Years old.
That is so funny. Wow.
Yeah, so and of course the mafia was involved in that.
Oh, shit. I can only
all the
imagine.
Time. So I think that's how the connection, I mean, they are Sicilian Italians, you know, they came from Sicily and immigrated into the United States. And so I guess all those people in New York had to have some sort of a connection, I feel like. And, but that's how the restaurant connection came. And Peter was an amazing cook. He was an amazing chef. And so he and his wife, Margie, created that first restaurant, and it was wildly popular.
You're a big cook, too, right? You do a lot of cooking,
I do,
too, right?
But
yeah,
I do
she's a good
Austrian
cook.
Cooking. I'm not like a chef, you know? but he was a chef, and he was not only a chef by being a great cook. Marcella talked about his personality in the last episode, but he was such a big personality that I think in today's world, if he had just stayed on the straight and narrow, I mean, he would be famous, like, because he was a mini celebrity in the city where he was, because he started being on all the radio shows and the TV shows, like, you know, the little Good Morning Texas, like we have here, they had there, because of his cooking and his restaurant, because it became wildly popular. It was so busy.
That's cool.
It was amazing.
Yeah.
And they had two sons, Frankie and Peter. And
very Italian for sure.
Yeah, hey, Peter Frankie, Jr.
Peter and Jr.
Yep. And so as it got more and more and more successful, more and more people came there, more and more people came there and started hanging out. Because if you have a really good Italian restaurant, it just draws them in.
So just to play along the timeline. So you just came, how soon after you came from Austria to this time frame, the restaurant, all this
stuff.
Well,
is when my dad was married to his first wife.
Okay.
So I was not his even, third.
Okay.
All right. I'm talking
because have to know how my dad got involved.
Yeah.
Because that makes it important.
Yeah.
Because at this time, he wasn't. He just had a little Italian restaurant with his wife.
Wow.
And two kids living normal American life, but making really moves with the restaurant because he was so good at it. And I've always heard that having a restaurant, you have to be really good with the back part, like the food cost and all that kind of stuff, and handling your, you know, help. And he was just a genius with that. He could get, unbelievable. So moving forward, it became so popular, there was not enough seats. So they built a mansion of a restaurant. I mean, a huge, humongous, unbelievable place on Jericho Turnpike in Smithtown, New York. And it became wildly popular. He had the Jackson 5 performing there, the Commodores.
Wow.
Four Tops.
Are you serious?
It was a place where people would go dancing. It was incredible.
Oh my gosh.
My dad loved to talk about the Michael Jackson thing too.
He loved to talk about it. He had a real cappuccino machine from Italy imported that was humongous. It was like the centerpiece of the restaurant. It was all gold and ornate and whatnot.
Wow.
And
not
so,
gaudy at all.
And I think the bathroom, I never saw it. The sad part is when I saw it, it was boarded up and I could just see like where things used to be. But from the time when it was really booming, it was unbelievable. The bathrooms were like super modern. People would go there just to look at the bathrooms. And yeah, he loved to talk about Michael Jackson because he said Michael Jackson was so shy. He could barely speak two words, super sweet, but so, so shy.
Wow.
He would always talk about it.
Yeah.
And then they would have a piano player and he would talk about this story. It was one of his favorite stories to tell. And it tells you a little bit of his personality. He loved to mess with people, loved to mess with them. So he had a piano player there that was regular, always. And Peter was really big about cooking for his people that worked for him. And so one night,
That's so nice. That's got to be really nice.
He make you fat.
Yeah, he made me fat.
That's
Thanks,
Dad. I'm still pissed about this.
He was happy though. I think he wanted me. This is like way later, but I think my dad wanted me to be fat so that nobody would date me. So he would
a fact.
That joke's is, on you, dad.
That is a fact.
Everyone.
Yes.
His way, if you got mad at him, his way of making up for it, he would cook.
Feed you.
And I was like, I don't want to so eat. Funny. Oh my God.
That is too funny.
It was his love language.
But it was always good though, right? It was always like ridiculous.
Ridiculous.
Oh, it was so good.
So this piano player.
I'm so hungry right now.
So listen what he did to this piano player. Just to mess with him, he made him veal parmesan, right? And he said he made made it like so amazing. And presentation was unbelievable. And he gave it to him. But what he did was he pretended it was veal, but he used paper towel.
Oh my God.
Didn't use any meat at all. And he like pounded it and flour.
Like, I had no idea.
A lot of effort.
We sent it, gave it to him, said enjoy, manjar, whatever he would say. And he goes, that end of the night, the guy came up to him and said, Peter, your veal parmesan was excellent, but I just want to tell you, be a little careful because I found a tiny piece of paper.
Oh my God. No meat. So it was all breading.
It was all breading
and paper.
Him paper towel. Funny. I mean, that's the kind of stuff he would do. It just kind of explains a little bit how he was. He was crazy.
Yeah.
He was absolutely crazy.
People.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Loved it. And so now this big place, his wife Margie is working there. I mean, she's part of the growth of the restaurant and everything. And they hire a hostess and her name was Lisa. Well,
oh, sorry to ruin it. Sorry.
That's a good
guess. What did you say?
I said wife too.
So Peter, who really, he was a gigolo. They called him that. I actually have proof. I printed out a conversation that Larry Iorizzo's wife sent to me and said he was a real gigolo. I mean, in his young
days. You have it right now?
My dad loved women. So let me just pause really fast. Mm-hmm. Did you ever meet Valerie Cole? Did you meet her, Val, ever when we were partying and stuff?
No, I'm sure.
Okay. So she was a bartender. And when my dad passed, she was like, I think you want these text messages. Your dad was my regular and he hit on me all the time. It was really sweet. Like, she meant it in a funny way. She was like, I thought you'd get a kick out of this. My dad.
Did you get a kick out of it?
Oh, yeah.
I was like,
I mean, at this point, I mean, by this time, I knew my dad. This is way forward and I don't mean to jump forward, but my dad was dating girls younger than me. So I was like, Dad, I don't want to meet this 21-year-old. Come to dinner.
So
just
crazy.
Loved women. I mean, would kiss them like on their cheeks. Like, oh, he just like loved beautiful women.
That's so funny.
Mm-hmm. So my older brothers would joke, like when we would go visit New York to my dad, we'd like give him a hard time, be like, how many other siblings do you think we have in New York somewhere that we might not know? And he would just laugh, but he just liked women.
Hey. Right.
So this is Larry Iorizzo's second wife. Now you guys have to know, I get into Larry Iorizzo's story later, but he was a bigamist. He was married to two women at the same time.
God. Being married to one woman is an ass whooping.
He
could not imagine that.
Five children with the first and second, with the second one, he had three. So
he has eight kids.
Like
eight
at
kids
the same
married
time?
At the
did
same
they know
time.
About each other?
Well I'll tell you
that
whole
okay.
story.
Right.
It's a crazy story.
Yeah.
But, anyways, the second wife. It's like number two.
Three?
I don't know how to call them.
Wife with five or
there
wife
was
with three?
Wife three. At one point, he was married to three women at the same time. But we'll get into that later.
Larry's story comes later.
Yeah. But at this moment, he is married to two. But so that is number two. Wife number two wrote this to me. And I don't know what year. Oh, no, I do know. This is in 2001. We kind of talked about stuff. And she said, I know Peter cheated on his first wife with Lisa. I knew Lisa.
This is to you. She's writing this to you?
Yeah.
Wow.
She was not a very good mother. She took drugs, and her son Michael was a brat when he was little.
Margie or Lisa?
Lisa.
Okay.
Margie was in the restaurant a lot, and Lisa was a hostess. Peter was fooling around with Lisa, but I never thought he would leave Margie for her. She was just like Freddie, which is actually wife number three for Larry.
Wow.
But not as flamboyant. She got pregnant. I never thought he ever divorced Margie. I thought he just went through the rituals to make Lisa happy. He really did not love Lisa ever. I think she trapped him. She certainly didn't want a child, but she thought Peter had all this money because he had that big restaurant. The house they lived in wasn't very nice, though. And Lisa was not beautiful. No way. Lisa was actually far from beautiful. Margie was a wonderful woman like most Italian women. Worked hard, kept a nice home, raised the kids, and never questioned him. She worked long hours at the restaurant. I think she was shocked and never forgave him for it. I don't think he would have ever left Margie if she did not throw him out. Lisa was young and stupid. She smoked pot while driving the car with Michael in his car seat. Margie was the typical Italian wife. She was awesome.
Did you ever meet Lisa or Margie?
Yes.
So, obviously, with that being said, my dad then, did he marry Lisa? Mm-hmm. Married Lisa and had my other brother named Michael.
Was he still married to Margie when he married Lisa?
No. That was rumor because... they actually asked me that crazy question when I had to go to court, but that's another question. That's another story for another day.
That's crazy.
But there was rumor, but no, I actually found their marriage certificate and I found their divorce certificate the other day.
Did they overlap? Wait, you found whose marriage certificate?
Lisa and Peter's.
And you found their divorce? Oh, okay.
I found everything.
Wow, where you find all this stuff?
She kept everything. It all.
Because people always told me I have to write a book. No. But I never got around to writing a book, so I thought we'll do a podcast.
Oh, no.
So here we are.
You definitely should write a book.
So
crazy. Still. Just tell you should.
Crazy. I don't want to write.
What's that?
I'll just do this instead.
Whew. This is insane.
So then she and I wrote about when she told me all about what a gigolo was. Now, thank God at this time, I am over him. I'm not in love with him anymore because I'm so mad at everything he put me through.
So are you with Patrick yet?
No.
Okay.
But this is like a crazy time. Like this is when.
So you're Marcella, you're here though.
Yes. Yeah. Okay. Gino too.
With this email or whatever.
Yeah.
Okay.
So this is when I just wanted to explain what a gigolo he was because this is a really funny story. This is when they went in Panama with Noriega. They were friends with Noriega, actually.
What?
Yes, because...
We'll get there, don't worry.
Oh my gosh, this is insane.
We're on our way.
That is crazy.
So they rented a house specifically for the girls. They all used the girls. Larry Jr. supplied the refreshments. They did it basically to take care of the bankers they screwed. They were just stupid young girls. One girl was from the bank and she was huge and ugly, but they had to keep her happy. I saw the pictures of some of these women. If you did, you would wonder why. They were all ugly. But what man turns down a free piece of ass? She goes, I lived with Peter in Panama. He had them coming to the front and back door at the same time. One time we were eating dinner and Peter had satin sheets on his bed. The cleaners brought the sheets back and had a note on it. It's since I was the only one who spoke Spanish, I had to translate. It's funny because it said, it can't remove stains. She said, we all died laughing. God. He had women in and out the door all the time.
That's a pretty common thing you hear about the mafia and mob people, you know, running prostitution and stuff like that.
She said they weren't hookers, but I don't believe that because I know another story where they got hookers. But... she said he was never with the same woman twice. But now he's old and not the gigolo he was when he was in his 30s.
My dad?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah.
Men seem to think that they can still do what they did then.
That is crazy. Why did she send that to you?
Oh, because her and I were going to write a book together because she has actually the first 20 years and I had the next 20 years. So we had like these plans, but I wanted her to come on the show and she passed away. Last year. So yeah. That was really sad. But let's go back to, I only told this story because of the hostess starting and mm-hmm. Peter being a gigolo and always messing around
Lisa?
With women.
Mm-hmm.
Lisa. And Lisa actually, we have a story on her.
Yeah, that's way
in
later.
The future. She's crazy. That psycho. Bitch. Yeah.
Somehow they all are.
God.
Somehow.
She's a special breed of awful.
Yeah.
Not
so
surprised.
We're in the restaurant, right? Larry Iorizzo is Peter's best friend and he had a running tab there. But he always paid his tab because they were friends, but he, you know, he was 600 pounds. So he loved to eat and
That's insane. How do you get to that big?
And he had two women at the. He was Bernie, married.
Bernie, wait till you see his pictures. He is huge. Well, keep going.
Yeah, show me. So, yes, if you have them, I totally want to see.
I had to look it up.
So, and of course, he is a bigamist, so he has two families, so he's always in and out of that restaurant, eating, racking up huge bills, and but he's paying them. But then Larry gets involved with Michael Francisi, and they are doing this big tax fraud deal where they're making millions of dollars, and they start using the restaurant as their mob hangout and mob meeting place.
Wow.
This is the time when PETA keeps the restaurant open all night long, and they have huge mob meetings there, like, all the time. But Michael Francisi tells Larry, don't pay the tab anymore. You don't have to pay the tab. So what started happening is the restaurant started struggling, and
so what is they
bled him
point?
Dry. PETA?
Yeah. I mean,
is what he's, you know, he's great friends with them. They start hanging out in the restaurant. Larry tells him, I do know this. I remember it because he told me that story. He said, Larry started saying, you're killing yourself, because the restaurant was so big and so busy. He would sleep there. Like, he didn't have time to go home. It was just a beating on him. And so Larry said, if you come with us, you can live a better life and all this kind of stuff. Oh. That all happened in, like, I want to say 83.
Wow.
I met him in 85. So all of these things started happening right before he met me. And there is a story.
So he started to, 83 is when he got involved with the mob.
I think so. But here is a story on, they had Small Business Administration started getting in trouble because they started loaning people, a lot of mob people, a lot of money. And it started causing issues. And there's all these stories about Michael Francisi being attached to all these places that got small business loans with car dealerships and all these other things. It is absolutely insane. Now, there's separate stories on all these entities, all these businesses, but there is an entire story on Ranieri's restaurant. So I wanted to read that real quick because it's kind of important. So the SBA critics in Congress questioned the agency's practices of making repeated loans to the same financially shaky business. The new SBA loan is used completely or in part to pay off an older delinquent SBA loan. That makes the SBA's lending record look better, clearing its portfolio, at least temporarily, of a bad loan. The practice, however, often puts the business into even worse straits, since the company assumes a bigger debt and often at a higher interest rate. The SBA loans to Ranieri's restaurant and its successor corporation, Chateau Rose, offer an example. PETA sold his restaurant for $1 to this guy, and I actually have the paperwork.
Oh, shit. Really?
Yes. And I was like, why would anyone sell this business for $1? I mean, look at it. It's incredible. He used to tell me, and I used to be so confused. I'm like, what do you mean you sold that big place for $1? And basically he said, I didn't care. I wanted to get out of it. We make enough money with Larry and Michael.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, so... and its successor corporation, Chateau Rose, offer an example. Although the SBA barred reporters from the loan files. Why are reporters barred from the loan files?
Wow.
Newsday newspaper found that the agency continued lending to the restaurant even after PETA Ranieri's involvement with mob figures. And his debts to loan sharks were extensively publicized. Then when Ranieri's delinquent SBA debt was assumed by new owners operating as Chateau Rose, the SBA relinquished its first claim on the best collateral, the land and restaurant building on a choice corner of busy Jericho Turnpike. When Ranieri got his first SBA loan in 77 for a new restaurant building, he was a well-known popular restaurateur. He had received considerable publicity for resisting threats and vandalism from mob figures. His tires were slashed, his windshields broken, and he told friends that he and his children had been threatened. Well, they not only were threatened, they actually came by his house and shot his house.
While he was in there?
While the kids were in there.
Wow. So what were they trying to?
Which actually my brothers remember.
Mm-hmm. No kidding.
Mm-hmm.
Where are your brothers at?
New York.
Okay. Ranieri attributed the problems to his choice of a building contractor. The contractor was Ronald Parr, who had cooperated with Newsday and police to thwart mob infiltration of a horse racing track, now defunct, the Parr had built in, I can say this, Yab Frank something. Ranieri got his first SBA loan for $350,000 through Gurian's Long Island Economic Development Corporation. Ranieri later testified that he started borrowing from loan sharks a year before he got the SBA loan. The loan sharks were Leopold Ladenhoff, not pay attention, and Michael Crimi. Police, however, said the money came from Pasquale Macrioli, a Genovese crime family captain. Macrioli installed his own manager at the restaurant. God, he had to have hated that.
Man.
Later, Crimi was convicted of usury and sentenced to 5 years probation for the Ranieri loans. Ranieri testified that the loans totaled $91,000 and that he had to repay $140,000 with weekly $2,200 payments.
Oh my gosh.
The year 1978 brought a blizzard of fresh publicity for Ranieri's restaurant. Macaroli and Ladenhoff were found murdered. With Ladenhoff's body, police found a document signed by Ranieri in which he agreed to turn over the restaurant to Ladenhoff and Crimi if he failed to make his payments.
Holy shit.
So this goes on and on and on about these SBA loans and all this kind of stuff. So last night, I was still researching to make sure I had all the details. And I came about a book that I'd never seen before, because they spelled Peter's name wrong. And this was actually the first time that I had seen this in my life. And I'd always wondered, I was like, I heard that the bodies were stuffed in a car, in the trunk of a car, and that happened in the parking lot of the restaurant.
Mm-hmm.
But the car was moved and they found these bodies on these cars at JFK Airport.
Yes. Well, Ladenhoff was JFK, and then that Mascaroli guy was Kennedy. Like, they moved. They're killed at different times.
Right.
But, like,
yeah. So.
That's just so insane.
So insane. And this is, like, what's really insane is I know there's newspaper articles. I've seen them.
Mm-hmm.
And I've seen Peter's face and Ladenhoff's face and this guy's face in the newspaper article. I cannot find it. I've tried and tried and tried and tried. It is somewhere. I don't know. You can't find it on the internet, which I find crazy.
Can you find, you know, I bet you if you somehow got a hold of the newspaper.
That's the next step.
Right. I would imagine they could send you the
right
copy of it, or PDF or digital file.
Yeah. So this is the continuation of this. Oh, I forgot to call Gino.
Call him.
Shoot.
For what?
To be part of the show.
Oh.
Oh my God.
Gina, where are you at? Why aren't you here with us?
He's not allowed.
Not allowed.
Oh, that's wow. Right. That's right. That's right. That's right.
My bad, guys.
He has to be this tall to be in the studio.
Hi, Gino.
Hi, guys.
Hey, I have to catch you up. We're in the middle of part four of the mafia story. And we're talking about the murder at your dad's restaurant. Where a body was found.
Y'all are so used to this whole thing. It's easy.
Where a body was found with your dad. There was a paper that your dad had signed about money he had to pay back to that person. So that paper was found with the dead body. But we don't know who killed that person. So I feel
like it's kind of obvious.
Well, so last night I was researching and I actually found a book that I had never seen before because they spelled your dad's name wrong. So, but I was going to read, this is following the murder and them finding the body, a situation at the Ranieri's restaurant. So I'm going to read the excerpts I found from that book.
Okay.
Ranieri was very nervous when talking to the detectives. He was afraid of being connected to a murderer. They thought that Ranieri was hiding something,
but was too afraid of Kay and Krimi to talk. Coffey told O'Connell to return to the restaurant and tell Ranieri that he was going to be charged with killing Ladenhoff. The motive would be that he could not pay the $250,000. Give him a few days to think about whether he wants to work more closely with us, Coffey ordered. But first, he told his two detectives, I want to meet this little shit, Steven Ladenhoff. Coffey was seething over the fact that the young man had refused to see his detectives. If the Coffey gang came calling, you had better pay attention. Otherwise, they could not be any more effective than a village constable trying to take on Murder Incorporated. The three cops returned to the Ladenhoff house. This time, Joe Coffey rang the bell. Steven Ladenhoff opened the door, but not the screen door in front of it. Coffey's bulk filled the doorway. His anger was obvious as he announced, I am Detective Sergeant Joseph Coffey, and I have a subpoena for Steven Ladenhoff to appear before a grand jury investigating the murder of Leo Ladenhoff. The younger man's reply did nothing to ease the tense situation. You are a scumbag, and you can shove that subpoena up your Irish ass, he told Coffey. Before Ladenhoff could take another breath, Joe Coffey put into effect the police technique his colleagues over the years had come to call Coffey's martial law. Tell Ranieri he's going to take the fall alone if he won't cooperate. Tell him we have no interest in messing with the nephew of Funzie Thierry as long as we can nail someone for the murder, Coffey told O'Connell. Driving out of the Bat Cave into the bright light of the warm April day, Coffey told Jack Cahill to head for the office of the Queen's District Attorney, where an assistant DA was putting together the Ladenhoff case for presentation to the grand jury. Cahill waited in the car while Coffey went upstairs to request a grand jury subpoena for Funzie Thierry. He did not really believe the old Don had any knowledge of the Ladenhoff hit. From what he knew so far, he did not believe it had anything to do with mafia politics. It was more likely just falling out of thieves. But because Krimi was throwing around his uncle's name, it gave Coffey a legitimate excuse to subpoena the old man and a chance to annoy the cranky hoodlum, who would certainly be angry with his nephew for causing a cop to visit his home. And it goes on and on and on about how this sergeant was just trying to strong arm all these people. And then he said he phoned headquarters and got a message to call O'Connell at Ranieri's restaurant. Joe O'Connell said, Ranieri is pissing in his pants. I told him he's going to have to talk to a grand jury about his role in the murder, and he nearly passed out. He says Krimi is Funzie Thierry's nephew, and he will slice him in little pieces if he talks. Funzie Thierry was the godfather of the Genovese crime family at the time, one of the most powerful gangsters in the country. Coffey's mind raced with the possibilities of connecting him to the Ladenhoff murderer. Up to his point, to this point, all Coffey's gang really had on Ranieri was circumstantial. He was among the last to see Ladenhoff alive, and he had a motive, the $250,000, but there was no physical evidence, no gun, and no witness who saw the murder. However, the tactic of scaring the restaurateur was working. Joe decided to press harder. The following day, the Queen's District Attorney was advised by Funzie Thierry's lawyer that his client was too ill to appear before a grand jury.
Who? What client? Who was ill?
Steven.
Huh?
Steven was too ill.
Good. I can't follow. That was okay as far as Coffey was concerned. The important thing was that Thierry made his displeasure known to his nephew, and Coffey had one more trick up his sleeve for Ranieri. The detectives had learned that he was a fanatic for attending his son's little league games. For several Saturday afternoons, Coffey arranged for one of his detectives dressed like the typical mob thug, shirt unbuttoned to his waist, gold chains weighing down his neck, thick sunglasses, to sit in the stands at the Little League field. The hood stood out like a sore thumb among the tennis shorts and t-shirts, and throughout the games, he never even looked at the field. He just sat and stared at Ranieri. The next time O'Connell and Maroney visited Krimi, Ranieri and the strong-arm K that reported a new level of cooperation, Krimi, it appeared, was no longer so sure of Genovese family backing. He and K began contradicting each other as to what they knew about Leo Ladenhoff. Ranieri may have thought of himself as a wise guy, but he was really a restaurant owner. He did not have the stomach to stand up to the kind of pressure being put on him. Thanks to Krimi's bragging and Coffey's stage direction, he thought he was the mafia's next target. Only the law held out any hope of his surviving, and Ranieri broke. Ranieri
The district attorney provided the following description to the grand jury. Peter Ranieri wanted to open a fancy gourmet restaurant on Long Island and went to Leo Ladenhoff for a loan. He apparently was making the correct payments on the loan, but Ladenhoff, the fringe player, was holding out the tribute money he had to pay Krimi, who was his connection with the Genovese family. Kay did Krimi's strong arm work. Ladenhoff told them Ranieri wasn't paying, so he had nothing to give them. Coffey's investigation concluded that there was a confrontation in Ranieri's restaurant on March 17th. In front of Krimi, Kay and another henchman named Caligari, Ranieri said he had been paying Ladenhoff the required money. Ladenhoff, of course, said Ranieri was lying. They went to a nearby motel to sort things out. And finally, Coffey threatened to take the case to the Twin Towers, the World Trade Center office of New York State's special prosecutor, John Keenan. The threat worked, and Krimi, Kay, and Caligari were indicted for loan sharking and murder. Ranieri agreed to testify against them. 2 weeks before the trial was supposed to begin, Kay was murdered, his body found in the trunk of his car at LaGuardia. Without Kay, the shooter, the murder charges fell through. There was some disappointment, but Krimi and the others were nailed for loan sharking. That took them off the streets for a little while. Joe felt that without his special unit, the people of New York would not have had the good fortune of seeing Kay murdered, and Krimi would never have been indicted for anything, much less convicted. The police department was pleased with the results of the Ladenhoff investigation and encouraged by the amount of information Coffey's gang was collecting along the way. It was now well past the 30-day deadline, and Sullivan gave no indication that the task force would be disbanded. After Ranieri agreed to cooperate, Coffey turned his attention to the Bridgiulio, and it goes on and on. I don't have the rest
that
of that.
That is so crazy. That's stuff that, like, movies are made of. Like, yeah. Real life. Hearing you read that is just crazy. He had been shitting his pants. Like, what do you do?
Well, and especially having kids.
That's
like
the thing.
My dad, like, having his kids.
What do you do? Like, when that's a movie thing.
Yeah.
Like, and that's
when
a real situation.
Somebody comes to your kid's sporting event and it's like staring at you.
Dude.
And my dad loved his kids.
Yeah.
So, and that is something, obviously, I wasn't here yet, but they remember. My brothers remember very vividly, and that is why if you like, when we get further along, I think that's where the hatred comes in for us, is that they lived like the getting shot at and the people, like,
you guys not get along, you all don't talk,
not anymore, but that's a story.
But that was recent. That was after my dad passed.
So I don't know. I don't know things, obviously. I pieced all this together later. Yeah. Because as naive and stupid as people can call me, that I didn't know things when I first met him.
I mean, if you don't know, you don't know. What do you know?
Right.
How do you know to know?
Right. But what I'm saying is, like, people always say, this is impossible, you didn't know. Well, I became a research queen afterwards. Mm-hmm. Because once I found out, I wanted to know everything. Yeah. So I pieced all this together. Do I know anything? I don't. But what I do know is that to be part of the mafia, everyone knows this, you have to kill somebody or you're not part of them. Oh. That's a fact.
I see you like, and I'm like, yeah. Yeah. I have no idea.
But I always thought that's a fact.
God, that's so crazy.
So would it be surprising that right before he joined Larry and Michael that this happened? I don't know. I have no idea. It just seems weird.
That's
so
crazy.
Because right after that, he sold the restaurant for $1.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Gino, your dad sold this humongous restaurant for $1 to this person. I have the paper for it.
Did you ever know this, Gino?
No, none of it.
This is crazy.
So,
you knew this before, or you just found
this
out?
Not some of those details. Like, I don't know the $1 thing. And I knew the murder thing because that was on the internet when the internet like became a thing in high school. And that is what people were talking about at my school. And I was very upset then. So I've gone through the emotion of like,
dude, that's crazy.
Being upset about that. And
God.
People bringing that up in school. And I was not okay with it because I was like, that is not true. Like, my dad did not do something like that. And then in my senior year, I did a bunch of research and found stuff. So I did know some things, but not all of these details, obviously.
But this is when Peter decided to get out of the restaurant business and join Larry, Irizo, Michael Franzese.
I mean, you almost
Sonny Franzese in their business.
There's a part like it's. I could, again, I say this respectfully. Like I could, in that kind of situation where your family and your livelihood and all the stuff is like literally threatened before your own eyes, like it would be. I couldn't imagine, God forbid, something ever happening to where I'm having to worry about someone coming to my son's soccer games, and I know why they're there and what are they gonna do at the end of the game? Yeah, so I can grasp the concept of how he could join that, like, just yeah. You know, fuck it, give me some protection. I'd rather do that because this my life is chaotic now. I'm guaranteed protection if I join these guys, because now you're involved one way or another. Now I'm not justifying, I'm just saying,
for
I could
sure
grasp
it just
the concept,
gives it a
right?
different outlook for sure. instead of being judgmental yeah. on the whole thing. Yeah,
I mean, he's fucked if he did or fucked if he didn't. That
totally.
Was the whole thing, right?
Yeah. So. That's what it sounds like. And he is joining people that are telling him they're making millions a week. So now you don't have to kill yourself in the restaurant anymore.
You don't have to sleep there anymore. You get to have a 747.
Dude, that's pretty legit. Mm-hmm. And you know what? So, I'm going to go fucking kill a few of these people. I'm going to have them kill some.
Exactly. So God. That was about the murder of the restaurant. And to be continued, we are finally going to talk about the $1 million tax
scheme.
Gasoline, daisy
chain
scheme.
Shit, everything you're bringing
the
up is
next
like
one.
So... exciting and interesting.
So to be continued, guys. Yeah. And we have a Miss Polly question.
It's time to party with Miss Polly. The modern day
dopamine. Is grinding considered cheating?
Yes.
Damn. I was like, grinding like with clothes on, like dry humping, is that what we're talking about?
Does it matter?
No, I just didn't know. But grinding, like dancing?
With somebody else?
Like twerking or something?
No, look, there's twerking. Yeah. And then there's grinding. Grinding is when your clothes is grind. I mean, I'm only taking from that question.
Yeah.
If somehow your vagina or your ass or if you're a dude, your front or your back is on someone of the opposite sex or someone of the same sex and your relationship, that's cheating.
Yes, and Miss Polly said, I'm assuming you mean grinding, as in rubbing against each other, most notably while dancing. Oh, well, if so, then if you are doing it in a sexual manner, then yes, you are cheating, or at least treating the person in a sexual manner, unless you're doing it as part of choreography or with someone with them.
Wow. Come on.
Y'all ever do that for the Mavericks?
Yeah, Miss Bella.
Yeah, but y'all never grind and twerked on guys while you did it, right?
No. So. I actually prefer to not dance on men in general.
That is so funny.
She said, oh, if they are gay, then it's fine.
That's, I mean, for a girl, I guess if you're dancing with a gay guy, I guess, yeah, it's different because it's kind of like a girl.
Yeah.
But I don't know. If it's a girl grinding with another girl who there's like some sort of vibe there, then that's the same thing. It's just as bad as cheating. It's cheating.
Yeah. Would you be mad if your girlfriend hooked up with a girl?
While we were together?
Yeah.
Yes. Fuck yes. If my girlfriend,
totally different question,
like if someone that I dated,
I'm curious.
I don't know. If it was like, and I had no idea I was going to, how would I not be upset?
Like, would you break up with her?
Yes.
You would? That's like cheating like a guy.
Like, yes.
Oh, I was just kidding. Yeah.
Would you not be upset if your boyfriend cheated with a guy?
That's different.
Why?
So I get why you're saying why. I do. I'm right there with you. But I also get why you're saying why, right? Because it's way more acceptable now in today's society.
No, it's not.
You and I are on the same page. So I'm right there with you. I'm team Gabby on this one for sure. I comprehend it though. It's very acceptable now. I mean, it is. It's not acceptable, but it's more looked at as okay for girls to do with girls and stuff. So no, unless that was my jam, that was something that I was okay
with. You both decided. I guess if you're watching, is that fine?
I mean, no.
Oh.
In no world at this age, when I was younger, I was involved. I did stupid shit like that. I didn't care and it was whatever, but not at my age now. I'm too old for that. I don't have the energy for that shit.
Gino.
Team Gabby and Bernie.
Damn.
I'm not on a different team.
Marcella, you're such a slut.
I don't do that. I was just asking.
I was drunk and high in college. Is it? No.
I didn't go to college.
That's right. So she was just drunk then. I left the college out of it. No, yeah, no. It's if it's someone who's not your significant other, yes, it's cheating.
Spider. He doesn't care.
He doesn't care at all.
No, I guess I would follow like with Miss Polly.
Right.
If you're just doing it, just having fun, whatever. But if you like are sexually attracted to the person doing that, then yeah, that's probably cheating.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think if it's like a friend that I knew, that, but I mean, I truly knew that there was an innocence there, I wouldn't give a shit. Just because I would, it's a matter of me feeling comfortable in the situation.
Right.
But then again, I don't want to be put in a situation that I'm even having to think about something
that's
like
true.
That. Right.
But you know, there's been like friends you've had, girlfriends that you've had that do that just to get a reaction out of people. Yeah.
That too.
You know, there's nothing really sexual about it. They're just messing around.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay.
Question of the day.
All right.
The two posh girls ask the question of the day.
Your significant other of 5 months invites you on a family weekend getaway, all expenses paid. Do you bring a gift for the parents for inviting you?
Hell yeah.
I wouldn't think to. I mean, maybe I'm rude or something like that, but I would never ever think to bring a gift that way. Yeah, I would bring like a bottle of wine, but that's kind of pretty common.
That's a gift.
Yeah. But I mean, I guess you're right. Right. Technically, it's a gift.
It is.
But I guess, yeah. So maybe something like that.
Yeah.
Just to be nice. Because I mean, if they're taking a trip, it's a nice fucking gesture.
True.
So I don't know.
I'd be bringing something, but my initial reaction would be like, I'm not going.
Well, oh, really? I guess this is probably different then for men than women. Because if the guy I'm dating is inviting me on a trip, like, I would assume he's paying for it.
Correct.
Or is he telling me that the parents are paying for it? Like, that's just kind of confusing.
That's
Do I bring a gift?
Very good point, actually.
I mean, you know?
I mean, maybe because it's the parents, be respectful.
Well, I think it's situational. I would imagine it's situational, though, right? I mean, okay.
Just in general, I'm finding out what your parents like to drink or eat or whatever they're really into and just taking something like that.
Yeah. That's nice.
So what kind of trip are we talking about?
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, it's all relative.
I've been on a ski trip with hedonism, but I didn't. Did not get.
Those are some interesting parents. Then, yeah. If it's, I mean, if it's like, I'm trying to think.
It depends.
I mean, if you're going to like Burleson, really... Texas, or something like that, for party, or
it's probably very situational.
It is, right. If it's like a beach vacation or like ski vacation or something like that, I think that's something worthy of, you know, I don't know. At least a bottle of wine or some sort of alcohol or something, or buying dinner or something like that. Like,
no,
that's
I feel like
gesture.
An asshole.
Just in general,
you are. Brought a gift.
You are.
Just in general, show up with something and then see what the situation is, and you can give it to them or you can keep it for yourself.
Yeah, there you go.
You know,
I just can't imagine that happening with the current list.
Oh my gosh, Gina, that was funny.
He's like, I can't.
I'm sorry, that's not funny at all, but that was just a funny response. Wow.
Wow. Yeah, I'd probably bring the best gift ever if I got from the girls I've dated, you know? But no,
that's something funny, like, dude.
That it's something like a bottle of wine or buy a dinner.
Right.
Oh my gosh.
What did Miss Polly say?
Oh, she said, absolutely. I would ask my significant other what their favorite beer, wine, liquor was, or what their hobbies were. I would probably bake something because that's my thing. Some type of gesture of appreciation is in order.
Yeah.
Well, Marcella sucks as a girlfriend, I guess.
Shitty girlfriend, Marcella.
Yeah, if nothing else, if you forget or you don't think of that, then offer to pay for something, you know?
True.
True dad.
What would you pay for? That if your guy asks,
yeah, based on what I've learned about you would be.
She's looking at me like, yeah. I'm like, wait, hold the fuck on.
That's so funny.
In what situation have
I gotta
you
give Marcella some credit on that?
Decided to pay because everything that I was taught, you're like, wait, hold on.
Gabby's like, your gift is my presence.
Wait, what are we talking about? Because I'm so confused. She's looking at me like,
that's so funny. That is so funny.
I
didn't
know I was supposed to pay for anything. Did you pay?
I was never invited by parents for anything.
I haven't been invited by parents either. I've been invited by the boyfriend. So am I supposed to bring the parents stuff if he invites me and pays for everything? That's as confusing. This question is not clear.
Ooh, that's actually a good point right there. I've never been invited by any parents.
That question sucks.
Damn you, Miss Pine.
On that note, everyone, remember, thank you for listening. Subscribe.
Write reviews. Subscribe.
Don't forget about our YouTube channel. And thank you so much.
Thank you.
If you like our show, you can follow us on all social media handles. Two Posh Podcast is on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter, as well as Two Posh Boutique is on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. And my personal Instagram is Gabby Talks, and my Facebook is Gabrielle Kendall Gilmore. So reach out to us, and here's Marcella's social media handles.
Also, our podcast is on all podcast networks. You can find me on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, Snapchat at Marcella Ranieri. Nothing really creative. My first and last name, MarcellaRaneri.
You can find me on Facebook at Bernie Diamond, or you can follow me on Instagram at _Bernie_Diamond. And there you go.
And Two Posh Podcast is also on YouTube. We have our own YouTube channel. Miss Polly.
Yes, you can follow me on Instagram at PR by Polly. My Twitter handle is Miss Polly Sex EDU.
Hey.
Beautiful, everyone. Thank you for listening. Subscribe to our channel. Subscribe to podcasts. YouTube.
You can see us all.
Yeah, and you, everyone have a wonderful day.